I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, and I work with women worldwide, assisting them in having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. I offer online one-on-one sessions, packages, and online courses for the conscious mamas who don't want to leave their birth up to chance. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment right now and leave a review. They mean the world to me, and is also your way of helping me reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. Together, we are changing the birth narrative, one birth story at a time. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Elke. Elke is a mama of two from South Australia. She's a senior secondary science teacher currently on leave to raise her two babies. Her first birth ended up in an emergency cesarean, quotation marks, due to failure to progress. However, if you've listened to this podcast, you know that 99.9% of the time, it is the failure of the medicalized maternity system, not upholding the physiology of birth, and not the woman who failed. Something that Elke discovered as she healed and learned deeper about birth after her first traumatic birth experience. Her first birth and entrance into motherhood blew apart everything she thought she knew, and her healing journey altered the way she looks at everything. It led her to the path of becoming a doula and mother blessing facilitator, and her own redemptive, empowering home birth after cesarean, which we will hear about today, and which made her into the VBAC advocate she is today. Curious about Elke? Find her on Instagram as Women's Way Doula. As always, I am here to support you in having your most empowering birth experience you can have. In the show notes, you can download my free 6 steps on how to have a natural and empowering birth, as well as my free ebook on routine hospital birth procedures to help you prepare and write your natural birth plan for a hospital birth or in case of hospital transfer. Of course, I'm always here and available for one-on-one coaching and support, and you can always take my online courses, the Natural Birth Course and the Nourishing Postpartum Course, to further prepare your body, mind, and soul for the transformational rite of passage that is birth and motherhood. Hi, Elke, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on.
I'm very excited to share my stories.
Very excited to hear them, as I'm sure everyone listening is as well. So today we're going to dive into your redemptive VBAC story, which means vaginal birth after cesarean. So before we do that, though, we will cover, you know, getting pregnant the first time and ending up on that pathway that led to, in quotation marks, your emergency cesarean. And I know nothing. Yeah. So I'm really excited to hear about kind of your takeaways, you know, the wisdom that you gained and that led you to wanting to home birth with your second.
Yeah, of course. So with my first birth, you know, home birth had always, whenever I looked at birth, home birth was what I saw and the pictures that I would see, but there wasn't an avenue for that where I live in rural South Australia. We had no private midwives. I didn't know what free birthing was at that point. So I just did what everybody around me does in a small country town. And, you know, we've got MGP, so midwifery group practice, which is great for our area. I'm very lucky in that sense. I was very educated. You know, I'd read Rhea Dempsey's books. I'd done some online courses. But I underestimated how vulnerable you are when you're in labor, and especially when you're not in an environment where you feel at home or safe. You know, hospital is a place where I've been, where I'm sick, not a place where I go to, you know, have such a powerful experience and have a baby.
Oh, I love this takeaway for everyone listening, because this is so true. Like, you can do all the prep in the world, but if you put yourself amongst people that are supposed to be your support team, right?
Yeah.
In an environment that is not conducive for physiological birth, it's going to be so hard to achieve that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's key, so the, isn't
yeah.
It?
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I had put, you know, too much faith in those around me to know my needs and know my wants and support them when, you know, there's hospital guidelines that need to be followed and, well, need to be followed.
Yeah, quotation marks.
And my husband, you know, it's his first baby as well. He didn't know what to expect. You know, we tried to prepare as much as we could. But, again, I put too much, I guess, faith and pressure on him to be able to advocate for my needs as well. So, you know, labor started normally, my waters broke. So it all started, you know, kind of nicely, I guess. But baby wasn't descending. I kind of got stuck in one position. Like, I got that real freeze mentality once I got to hospital, because they told me to come in for antibiotics, which in my head I was like, no, but good girl complex, yes. Yeah, so got stuck in one position, you know, kept laboring, but baby didn't move down. So, you know, had vaginal exams, which were very uncomfortable. And then it got to, so it had been probably, so 4 a.m. to about 10 p.m.
Wow.
I never saw the obstetrician, and my midwife had kept coming in and out talking to him, and he'd recommended an epidural to help me relax, bring baby down, and then push baby out. Whole pregnancy, I had told my husband, you know, I'm probably going to get to a point where I ask for an epidural. Don't let me. Like, it, no. But vulnerable me was like, yes, save me. I need it. And he, you know, kept saying, no, 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 no. And then we were told, you know, I think her best shot at a vaginal birth is the epidural, which I knew, like, I know, and I knew then as well, that the epidural, you know, slows labor, slows contractions. I'm going to be stuck on a bed, can't use the right movements and gravity to help bring baby down. So once he heard that, he was like, okay, like, this is in the best interest of her having a vaginal birth. So we did that, had the epidural, got some rest. Then 5 a.m., you know, they put the Syntocinon in because still no progress, contractions were slowing, baby still not moving down. Did 2 hours of that. You know, I had dilated, I think, to 7 centimetres. Not that that tells me when I'm going to have a baby, as we know. And then the midwife said, you know, rang the obstetrician, and he refused to come in until she had checked me. So she used those words as well. So she did a vaginal exam, and then he called a cesarean, but it was 7 a.m. and said, well, there's no point calling theatre staff in. We'll just wait until they start. Yeah. So in my head, you know, it's not an emergency. Why are we doing this? But at that point I was, you know, that exhausted. Yeah, so the first time I saw the obstetrician was in theatre prep. Baby wasn't monitored because they weren't worried about baby. Led to the cesarean. A very traumatic experience for me and my husband. I won't go too much into it, but then after that, it was COVID, the circuit breaker in South Australia. So like the really strict lockdown. So we had baby in the morning, and then my husband got kicked out of hospital that night and couldn't come back. Mm. So I was out of hospital the next day.
What? After a cesarean?
Yeah. I thank the staff that they let me do that, because there was no way I was going to stay there without my husband. I wanted to be as a family. But it was, you know.
Gosh.
It's the lesser major of two evils, really.
I know, wasn't because it? It's major abdominal surgery. You know, for anyone that's thinking that a cesarean is the easy way out, it is not. It is
no.
It is hard recovery. It's long. And, you know, there's a lot of complications that can happen, which is why you should stay in hospital to be monitored after a massive abdominal surgery, right? But I also understand your desire to come home. Of course, your partner, your husband couldn't be there. God, definitely two evils at the same time, isn't it, to choose from?
Yes. Mm. So, you know, that first night we spent separated. I couldn't sit up. I couldn't. It was just that added, obviously, to the trauma, because every time my son would cry, I had to buzz a buzzer to get him out. Every time he needed a nappy change, you know, I had to buzz a buzzer. Whereas normally, like, your partner would attend to and bring them over to you. So yeah, home the next day, and then just, you know, it was a tale for what was to come. Really struggled with bonding, struggled with feeding.
Yes.
But it led me. I saw a really great story the other day that a woman had had a traumatic birth, but it was a catalyst for the things to come.
Absolutely.
And his birth was such a catalyst for the journey that I've been on. And you know, I might not have had the redemptive birth that I had if I hadn't had that experience. And I'm not saying, you know, yep, let's do it all again, but it taught me so much, and there were so many lessons and so many takeaways, and I've got a beautiful baby boy, and my perspective on everything has changed. So, but the big one is, that vulnerability, and ultimately, like, you are in charge and you can't expect others to do all the things for you. It comes down to you and making sure that those people that you have around you are the right support people.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously this podcast is called the Natural Birth Podcast, and yes, I am an advocate for physiological birth for mom and dad, 100%. But that does not negate that you can't, like, having another type of birth and having a traumatic experience, whether that is through a natural birth or a medicalized one, a cesarean, because you can have that experience in any kind of setting like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Birth itself is transformative, whatever kind of birth you have, and is equally valid. And I know so many women who've had, you know, in their own experience, how they would say a traumatic birth experience, going on doing amazing things in the world, you know, that traumatic experience, whether that is in birth or any other place in your life, is a gift in disguise.
Yeah.
It always can be. It's how you approach it. It's how you then heal from it, integrate it, move with it. What can it, you know, what fire does it light in you? And it sounds like for you, as so many other women, it does that for you, and you can then help other women. You can do something great in the world from that experience, right?
Yeah. And that was my exact thoughts after, you know, I had to find out why, you know, why did this happen? What and really there wasn't one reason. It was a whole, you know, accumulation of reasons due to the interventions. And I found out, you know, that it didn't need to happen, and choices led to why it happened. And then when I found my answers through my own research and found, you know, all the evidence-based practice, and a lot was done that wasn't evidence-based, wasn't informed consent. It was just, we're going to do this, okay. Mm. I came to this realization and I thought, how? Surely I can't be the only woman that has had this big epiphany. And then what can I do? How can I get this out there? And how can I make the biggest difference in my sphere? Like, I'm not going to change the world, but I can help women around me if they want it. And what can I do? How can I do that? And that took a lot of considering. And then I thought, you know, what if I become a doula? Mm-hmm. Then I can educate the women that want it. I can educate, you know, the community. I can help women if they need to, if they feel aligned with that. But it was really about women making their own choice for me, not feeling like they had to go with the grain or go with what they're told, making those informed decisions, which I didn't make in my first birth, but definitely did in my second.
I love that. So let's dive on into your second birth now.
Yeah.
So how long in between the two, you know, when did you
start? So Banksy was born in November 2020 and I fell pregnant at the start of last year, the start of 2022.
Mm.
So there's 23 months between the two, between my two babies.
Mm, beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a good time as well to both, you know, heal and integrate what you yeah. first birth, but also replenish your body, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It came down to, you know, that mental capacity, that physical capacity, and that healing as well. I had done so much research about, okay, how am I not going to have that birth the next time? How am I going to have a VBAC? And I had heard that there was a midwife, a local midwife, who was about to start practicing privately. And then as, yeah, because I had looked into free birth. And, you know, if I wanted to have a home birth, I was going to have to travel. And so I was just, you know, arming myself with whatever I could, but not ready to have a baby yet. And then I heard, yep, this is private practicing midwife coming out soon. And then she advertised. And we hadn't even started trying for baby number two. But I just emailed her. Like, I need to know, like, would you support a HVAC? Well, we're soon to be trying, but not just yet. And she was like, yep. And it was just this weight lifted off my shoulder. Because, and I cried. I was putting Banksy to sleep. I checked my phone and I got this email and I just had tears coming down my cheeks because I knew I wasn't going to have to fight for the birth I wanted. I knew that it was going to happen the way that I wanted and the way it needed to. And it was just, it was amazing. And then it was a few months after that that we felt, yeah, that the time was right for baby number two. And we were very lucky. Yeah. Yeah. It was just like this. It was, yeah, the best feeling aside from giving birth.
Yeah.
It was the best feeling.
And I just wish that all women could have the opportunity and choice to choose their care provider freely in this world.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be such a thing that you would have to fight to have the birth.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. And although she is like the only private practicing one close, we aligned, like she was actually, it was funny, well, not funny, but it's weird how the world works. She was the midwife that took over from my assigned midwife for Banksy's cesarean. Yeah. So she wasn't there for the whole labor and everything. She just, you know, I'd been in the hospital so long, my midwife's shift had ended. She took over. And with the first one, she's like, you know, doesn't mean you can't have a vaginal birth next time. And then, yeah, she's my private midwife.
Mm.
So that's pretty amazing.
Just on a little side note for anyone listening here, you know, because when you've had a cesarean in most of the world, I would say 99% of everywhere, you're then classified as higher risk, right, for your second. And the risk that they're talking about is that your uterus, your womb would rupture where the incision was for the cesarean. But if you actually look at the evidence, you have the same risk of rupturing your womb, which is super duper small, right? As a first time mum.
Yeah.
Just let that sink in for a second.
Is it like 2% or 0.2%?
Oh, God, I can't even tell you.
It's tiny.
It's tiny percent. But listen, you who had a cesarean has the same risk or chance of it not happening, right, as a first-time mom who've never had a baby before. So how come you are more high risk? Doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
No, but they treat you as such for pregnancy, for birth, for monitoring, for everything. But a first-time mom is not high risk, is she?
No.
So you're not when you've had one cesarean. You're not high risk. You're not. No. It's bullshit. No. Excuse my language.
There's a 98% chance that it won't happen.
Exactly.
I went to Hazel Keedle's BBAC workshop this year as a birth worker. And for her VBAC, her husband is really good with stats and told her, you know, you've got a greater risk of getting in a car accident driving to the hospital than you have of having a uterine rupture.
Exactly.
It's all how we frame it. And unfortunately, the system frames it to be a scary statistic when it's a risk. It's a really small risk. Mm. But if you're okay with that little risk, then.
You don't walk around being scared of being hit by a car or being in a car accident, do you? Ever?
No.
Do you? Like, I never sit in my car going like, whoops, today could be the day, you know, better prepare myself. Oh my God, I should listen to all the accidents I've ever heard. You know, it's just, if you just like think about it like that, you go like, what are we doing to women? Telling them their car is for things that when you actually look at the statistics, it's minuscule. It's very tiny, very tiny.
It is.
And it's not just VBAC. It's on all kind of high risk.
Whole range of levels. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, that was a side note. I just thought it was really interesting to point that out for anyone who might be, you know, considering having a home birth or a VBAC.
Yeah. And a lot of the research that I looked at and the podcast that I listened to from researchers, in a lot of the women that had a uterine rupture, they could feel it. They knew before any hospital staff knew or any machines could tell them. So I thought, you know what, if it's going to, the tiny, tiny chance that it does happen. Mm-hmm. If I'm in a place where I'm in tune with my body, in tune with my intuition, I'm going to know before anyone else anyway.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
All right. Let's dive on into your birth story.
Okay. So, so we fell pregnant and the midwife, I'm going to call her Alyssa. I've asked her. She said that's fine because, you know, we're friends now and it's great. She was the first to know because I was like, yep, jump on that. This is the way we've got a birth. And the pregnancy was, you know, amazing. It was easy, as easy it can be with a toddler. But it was smooth, no issues. I actually knew that I was pregnant before I had missed a bleed. But, you know, I still did the test just to make sure because I was reacquainting myself with my intuition and just needed that, you know, that psychological, like you do know. And we did do like the non-invasive prenatal test, just again, you know, I knew everything was fine. I felt everything was fine. And I had like I knew that I was going to give birth to a baby girl. But again, I was just like, I needed that confirmation that, like, I do know that my baby and I do have this great connection. I do know, I can sense her. Of course, came back all good, and she was female, so that was lovely. And then, from then on, I was just like, I knew that I could trust what my body was telling me, what my baby was telling me, that my intuition was right. You know, we had our appointments at home. we did the 20-week scan as per Alyssa's request, just to make sure the placenta was out of the way, which I was totally fine with. And it was, you know, I always saw them as a chance to see the baby. I was never really too worried about what the outcomes were. Just I know it opens up, depending who you're birthing with, who your care provider is, it opens up some risks and possible consequences based on those scans. But for me and for my husband, that was like a really exciting time. We got to see her moving around and wriggling and knowing that the placenta was out of the way and this home birth was 100% going to be a thing, like it was going to happen. That was our last little maybe that was lingering.
Yeah.
And I'd done a lot of work, like mentally preparing from Banksy's birth. I'd done so much research and I was 100% confident that my body could do it. So I'd gone from thinking that, you know, with the damaging terminology from my first birth, failure to progress, you know, wasn't in active labor. I was like, okay, going from, going from thinking, you know, a really dark place, thinking that my body's broken, my body doesn't fail me, thinking I was, you know, an imposter, to then doing a full 180 in the opposite direction, knowing without that lived experience, knowing that my body could do this, I could do this, you know, it could have done it the first time in the right environment, it's going to do it this time. And my husband, again, went from someone who, you know, was scared of home births, trusted doctors, to then was so excited to be birthing at home and just found the whole process, the whole pregnancy and process so easy, which was just, it was lovely to see his growth and development as well and his support. So, yeah, the pregnancy was fine, easy. I was really in tune with baby the whole time. I did have a little, it was just like one half a day where we were driving in the hills somewhere. And I just had this moment where I was like, I know that my body can do it, but what if my mind can't? And my husband was just like, you've learned so much over the past almost 2 years. Like, you can do this. It's, your body can do it. And I just, you know, I had a cry, I let it out, and it was just out of the whole pregnancy, it was just like that half a day where I had that, not doubt, but just that worry. And then I let it out and then it was gone. And then a few days or maybe a few weeks, I said to my husband, do you know that my body can do this? And he said, no, I don't know. And I was like, alarm bells, like, what are you saying? And he said, I don't know because I'm not you. I don't have your body. He said, but I trust you and I trust that you know that your body can do this. Yeah. And I thought that was beautiful because he's right. He doesn't know if my body can do it because he's not me. And he can have faith and trust that it will do it. Yeah. But only I was going to know that. Which is really beautiful. Yeah, so yeah. I guess we'll get on to the 37 weeks actually. I got COVID.
No.
Yeah. So that was really horrible. That shook me up. I was, you know, bedridden. My husband got it as well, and so did Banksy, my son. And I worried. I was like, if I go into labor now, like I don't have the energy stores to do it. And then the worrying about that just took too much. And I came to that point where I had to just calm and know, look, my body and my baby will communicate and my baby's not going to come and my body's not going to go into labor while I'm like this, while I'm not feeling 100%.
Yeah.
So I just had to surrender to that. Lo and behold, I got better at about, you know, 39 weeks. I was like, okay, if it happens, I'll be okay. So that was, you know, probably the biggest bump leading up to it, but we got through and that was fine.
And that's it, isn't it? You know, you do have a lot of control over your mind and body. You actually do. You know, women will wait for a certain person to be, you know, their mother to come, or this to get sorted, or for work to finish, or whatever it is before they go into labor. And if you're sick, most likely you will go like, oh, well, not birthing now. And, you know, so your body will listen.
Yeah. And it did. And I thank it for that.
Calling you the mystics, mothers, maidens, and magas, the nurturers, healers, birth workers, midwives, doulas, and nurses, the seers and visionaries, shamans and changemakers, and you, their rebel ones. You who recognize birth as a sacred portal and a life-altering event worthy of honoring and safeguarding. You who want to walk alongside women through her rite of passage from maiden to mother and provide a safe, sacred, and physiological birth space. Here is your invitation to apply for the Spiritual Midwife Mentorship Program starting in September. A full year's container of learning, embodying, and deepening into a true space holder and sacred advocate for a woman's rite of passage of birth. By weaving ancient and modern knowledge of her story, women's wisdom, physiological birth skills, and the art of sacred space holding, this program is unique to its kind as it also offers transformational one-on-one mentoring with me, personally assisting you in becoming the clear channel and the best space holder that you can be. You will be held, nurtured, and supported for a whole year inside our worldwide spiritual midwife community as you learn and embody the teachings and skills and start sharing your gifts with the world. This mentorship program is for you who feel a deep calling to serve as the custodian of the sacred at the birth altar, whose intuition is ringing clear as you receive this invitation. Find out more and apply at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
So when did labor start for you? Did you have any early signs of labor approaching, or did it start with a bang for you?
No, not a bang. So I had had lots of Braxton Hicks. We were at my in-laws for dinner on a Sunday night, and about 6 o'clock, you know, I started to get light contractions, but I didn't, you know, they didn't take anything and I didn't really pay attention. I thought, oh, they're just, you know, Braxton Hicks again, but they feel a little bit different, and they continued throughout dinner. But I didn't say anything. I just, you know, we continued eating. And then, it was about 8:30, I think. And Jared was like, oh, I'm just going to have a red wine. I was like, no, I think we need to go home. Anyway, he had his red wine. And in the car, I said, I think I'm in labor. I think I'm having contractions. But it was obviously different. Banksy's, my waters had broke and then contractions started. Whereas here, you know, I had these just really light contractions, but enough to know what was happening. Mm. So we went home and I just said, look, we'll get ready for bed. I'll put Banksy to sleep. They might fizzle out, or it might just stay really light for a long time. Banksy's labor was really long, so we were expecting that it was going to be a really long labor. So I cuddled him to sleep, thinking, oh, this could be, you know, the last time that I put him to sleep as my only child. Had a shower. Jared was on the couch, and I came out and I said, you know, they'd gotten a little bit stronger, but still very, very manageable. I said, I don't think this is going away. And he was like, oh, I haven't had any time off work yet. He runs his own business. So, but it was very exciting. So we set up the birth pool. We were meant to set it up that day. So we set that up. We set up a few things on the lounge, set up some fairy lights. Like, we were all very excited, very calm though. And then I was needing to lean over when the contractions came and sway, still talking through them, still perfectly fine, but it was just, you know, moving on a little bit quicker than what I thought it was going to. I sent Jared to bed and rang Alyssa just to let her know, you know, something's happening. It was about 10:30, I think. And I've been on and off the toilet. Your body was clearing out as it does. I did a few little of the Miles circuit maneuvers on the bed, which really I probably could have done them earlier, but I didn't, you know, I didn't accept, I guess, that I was in labor. I thought I still had a long way to go.
For anyone who's listening who doesn't know what that is, do you want to share what the Miles circuit is?
Yeah, so the Miles circuit is, I think it's three moves, just where you get into certain positions and it just helps baby rotate and get in the right, what baby can be born any way they want. There's no right or wrong. But just getting that head down, you know, body facing outwards, spine facing outwards position, and just opening up the pelvis. So, yeah, I did, I think, two of those and then it got too uncomfortable and wasn't really relaxing and I felt like I needed to move. So I got out of bed and was between the toilet and standing up, and then I had been saving with Banksy's birth the shower and the water until it got too intense but never got to use it. So I had thought about using the TENS machine, but I was like, no, I'm just like, I'm really drawn to water right now. So I jumped in the shower and all the contractions were in my front, in my belly. So just having that water running over my stomach was heaven. It was magic. And then all of a sudden I felt the need to vocalize, like just softly. And that woke my husband up. We've got limited hot water. So he's like, well, we'll just turn the shower off and I'll fill up the bath pool, the birth pool. So that we don't run out of hot water. So I was in and out, on and off the toilet. He had set up the GoPro and the fairy lights outside. We'd had like the fake fire on the TV because it was in the lounge room. He was bringing the GoPro in and it was like it got to that point where it did in Banksy's birth where it was quite intense. And I let Jared know that it, you know, it was getting quite intense. And he's like, but, you know, that you can do this. And I was like, I know, I just, you know, just needed to let you know that. So, you know, we'd set up the fairy lights. They were battery operated. I turned them off thinking, well, the battery's going to go because I'm going to be in and out the birth pool to the bathroom, to the bedroom. Better save these batteries, but I never returned to the bathroom until the baby was born. So I went out, I think it was about 12:30, went out to the birth pool and just getting in that water was so relieving. And, you know, you're weightless and you've got warmth all over. It was just, yeah, it was magic. So he had our birth playlist playing. I tried a few different positions. He was excited, kind of just walking around, figuring out what to do because I didn't need to hold his hand. Yeah, I didn't need him to massage me or anything. He was just, you know, checking the monitor, making sure that Banksy was still asleep. That was a really nice time because I was, you know, they were taking my attention, but in between, you know, we could talk and we could converse, and he was saying a few jokes, which was lovely. And I had talked about, you know, I'm not sure if we should call Alyssa yet. And he, because I knew, like, I felt safe and I felt fine. I just knew that she was going to come at some point. We needed her to come at some point. And it was like she was kind of the missing piece, I guess, before baby came. So I said to Jared, you know, do we call Alyssa or do we wait? And he said, look, she's going to do what I'm doing. Like, she's just going to sit and observe and, you know, listen and make sure you're okay, because that's what, you know, wonderful privately practicing midwives do, and not privately practicing as well. They wait and watch. And he just said, look, if you want to, we can. But he felt really comfortable, just me and him, which at the time was really wonderful. And I asked him a few days ago, you know, what did you mean, like, mean by that? Would have you been okay if, you know, we had just birthed the baby, me and him? He said, I would have called once you started pushing, but he felt so comfortable and trusted me that I knew that baby was going to be okay. So that was just really lovely. So we continued on, and then I felt my membranes release, which was during a contraction. The waters were clear. And then after that, they got more intense, and I think I had two really long ones back to back. I was like, okay, call Alyssa.
Yes.
Like, it was, yeah, it was ramping up.
It is on when the waters break, especially when you've been in labor for a while, it's usually going to ramp up.
Yeah, like I could feel it, not on the, like, almost on my bones. It's like, yeah, this is, that padding's gone. Mm-hmm. Baby's making their way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that was about 10 past 1. And like I said, I felt safe, but she just was that last little piece when I knew that I could fully surrender. I'd tried a few different positions in the birth pool, but ultimately I was on my knees leaning over, holding my husband's hand, and I didn't really move from that spot until baby was born. It was just, you know, every contraction would come and I would focus on softening my shoulders, softening my face. He would massage my shoulders, you know, wipe my hair out of my face. And it was just, they were so intense and they took all of my focus, but they were so doable. Like, it wasn't like, I can't do this. I never had this thought of, I can't do this, this is too much. There would be moments where, you know, I would kind of dread. I was like, oh, here comes another one. But it was earlier in labor, Jared said to me, you know, that's one down. Tick that one off the list. And I was like, yeah, one down, one more closer to meeting my baby. And they just, yeah, I would inhale really quickly, and on the exhale it was long and slow, and I would vocalize, and I just, it was amazing how much that vocalization on an exhale, like, really helped and really relieved that pain, and that sensation and that intensity. And then as quick as the contraction had come, it would go and I would get a break. I think during most, like after most of mine, I got a break, which was lovely. You know, I hit some mums contraction after contraction after contraction, but, you know, my body and baby just knew that I needed that little bit of rest in between. So that was really nice that they communicated that to each other. But we weren't, you know, we weren't doing all the things. I had a birth sling, I had a TENS machine, I had reflexology combs, because I thought, you know, might need all these little stations and I might need to do all these different positions. But once I was in the pool, that was it. Like, that was my space. That's where I felt safe and comfortable, and it was manageable. And it progressed a lot quicker than what I thought it was going to. So, yeah, like I lost track of time. When you're in labor, there's that, you know, you know what's going on around you, but you can't fully communicate. And so Alyssa came, I could just feel her presence in the room once she arrived. It was just like this aura. She didn't make any noise. And then once my contraction finished, she just put her hand on my shoulder. She's like, I'm here. And it was just, I don't know, this, yeah. Beautiful feeling. I think just having another female in the room, it changes it. Like, someone that has seen birth, has birthed before, has, you know, it was just this energy. It was really nice. Not that my husband doesn't have great energy, but there's something about women women in the birth space. Absolutely.
Women have always birthed with other women. And, you know, the wise woman of the village has always been present at birth. You know, it's,
yeah,
it is a deep remembrance for women to be with the women in birth.
Yeah, definitely. And that was something that I kept coming back to, with that I've got the support of all the birthing women before me, of my ancestors. And there's other women in the world right now birthing at the same time as me. We're doing it all together. Mm-hmm. That collective power, it's really nice. The position I was in, my hips weren't fully covered. So, you know, Jared went to turn the hot water on and fill it up again. And it was coming out cold and I could feel it, but I couldn't say, but luckily Alyssa could feel it. So they, you know, ran off and got the urn and were boiling the kettle and boiling the pots and typical home birth stuff that you can do. But it was really nice once they'd, you know, tip that warm water in, or like hot water, and I would feel it dissipate around me. Mm-hmm. And then another one just, you know, in slow increments. And that went on, and my hips got sore, so I had a flannel on my back, and then that would dry out, so they'd warm it up again just as the water topped up. I had just some light hip massage. I think that was the only time I had hands on me. It was maybe, I don't even know how long it was, maybe 5 minutes, maybe half an hour. It could have been. Who knows? But it was, yeah, it was wonders, wonderful, just that little hip release. I tried, you know, leg up, leg down, but it was just that one position, leaning over the birth pool, holding onto Jared's hand. Yeah. It was just my safe space.
Yeah, and it's great. It opens up your hips and makes you, it's in the water too, you're just so, like, free to move, and you feel like you kind of have control over your body, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, whenever I tried something else, it wasn't comfortable. So I always came back to that. I felt close, like closed in. I had my head in the tower on the side of the pool. Jared was right there, and it was just, yeah, like a big hug, hug from the pool. So that, yeah, just continued for a little while. And then all of a sudden the urge changed and my vocalization changed. And I was like, oh, like this means that baby's close. So that was really exciting. But that took like some contractions I would have that feeling and that urge, and then some I wouldn't. Yeah. So it was, yeah, a kind of like maybe in 50 minutes of having that. And then, you know, the sensation changed again. And I could feel that she was so close. And I heard Alyssa's voice. She's got this beautiful, you know, calm birthing room voice. And she was like, that's it, that's it. And I was like, oh, like she can see something. This is happening. I'm doing something right. Or I was doing the whole thing right. But yeah. I was like, oh, okay, go with this. And she just kept coming in and out slowly, like Goldie, my baby, slowly in, slowly out, slowly in, slowly out. And I was like, where is she? Like, I think I hit the transition, and I was just, you know, my brain kind of kicked back in. I was like, where's my baby? She said she's like, everything is full. Like, reach down and have a feel. And I had, you know, kind of felt that I didn't want to move too much from that position. And I was like, oh, okay, everything's full, but she's not close. I reached down and I could feel her head right there. I was like, okay, like she's right there. This is happening. And, yeah, she did this really slow dance of in and out, in and out. And there was this one point where it felt like her head was half in, half out, and it just stayed there and just stayed there. And then it went back in slowly, slowly, and it was so uncomfortable. And I was like, oh, no, like what happened? She said, that's okay, you know, slow and steady wins this race, which I knew, of course, but it was just, you get to that point. Well, I got to that point. And because it had been such a slow easing, I guess, I was like, let's just get this baby out.
Yeah, so often women get frustrated at the end there, especially if it is a few of those contractions where the head is almost popping out and then no.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's stretching, and you have to remember that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's just like, this is brilliant. It stretches the perineum and the tissues. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And that's it. After she said that, you know, it's a slow dance. I was like, yeah, okay. She's doing what she needs to. Baby's doing what she needs to so she can best emerge so that, like you said, I can stretch. And if she needed to shoot out, she would shoot out, but she wanted to come out slowly. And so she did that. And then I think the next one, it was a long, slow push. I didn't like consciously push. It was always the urge. And every time I would try and relax my shoulders, relax my jaw, and just let it happen. And then I like had to kind of pant, and I felt this ring of fire that I don't actually like. It was intense stretching. I feel like the fire sounds really kind of horrific, doesn't it? But it was just this really big stretching, like stretch to the max. And I was like panting, and then felt this relief, and her head and her shoulder had come out. And I was like, oh, okay, like, where is she? She's like, Elisa said, you know, just one more push, she's almost there. I was like, I can't. And Jared was like, yes, you can. It's like, okay, I know I can do this. And then, you know, the next contraction came. I didn't do anything, and baby came out. Elisa just did like a gentle hand, and because I was kneeling over, just underwater guided her through my legs. I sat back, and I had let out a little bit of blood, and it was dark. You know, we had the fairy lights going, but I couldn't see too much. I was like, where is she? She said, Lisa said, just, you know, reach in. I reached into the water slowly and picked Goldie up and put her on my chest. And then I sat back, and she took a moment, as you know, as I do, and then just let out a little cry. And I was like, I've got you, I've got you. And it was just, it was a matter, like it was the biggest oxytocin high, the biggest relief, that biggest, there's nothing like it, is there, when you have a physiological birth. It was just, I was in awe and relief, and it was just magic. And we were just sitting there, you know, Jared had come over, Goldie did like this huge cry, and we just both looked at each other and laughed, like, and Jared said, easy as that. And we're just sitting there, and there was a moment where I was just like, I did it. And Elisa said, yeah, you fucking did it. I said, I did it. We did it. Like, it was in that moment that I think it had sunk in that, you know, I had birth this baby out of my vagina after thinking, you know, my body's failed me. The baby had come out my vagina at home in a birth pool. It was a daughter who had this epic birth story, this healing birth story. And it just, there was so much healing in that moment that, you know, how much power I have, and just how raw birth is. And it was just, it was a beautiful moment. Yeah, we all had the warm towel draped around us. Elisa heated them up in the oven. We sat there for a while longer. I just kept talking to Goldie, and it was really beautiful.
Oh, what a beautiful story.
Yeah. I did have a little bit of blood loss. So we got out the pool and just laid on the couch, and everything was fine. Goldie laid on my chest. She breastfed, did the breast crawl. The contractions for the placenta were quite intense, because I hadn't experienced them before. And I think I fought them a little bit, but, you know, I was comfortable. I had Goldie on me. But the placenta took 2.5 hours to be birthed, which, you know, he's on the longer end. I went, you know, back and forth from the toilet to the couch. No one was worried. I wasn't worried. Alyssa wasn't worried. The second midwife had arrived. She missed the birth because Goldie was born at 10 past four. So it was only really, I think Alyssa got there maybe 1:30, quarter to two. So it was only really a couple of hours. We were expecting this big, long birth, but, it, you know, second babies, as they do, especially when you're comfortable.
That's
in an environment that you're comfortable where all the hormones.
Exactly. You're trusting the process. Yeah. You knew more this time. Your partner, you both felt safe.
Yeah.
That is the key. It really is.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. So I ate some crumpets while we waited for the placenta, had a cup of tea, and then, yeah, the placenta was born along with a nice big blood clot, but that means that your body's doing what it should.
That's it.
Goldie stayed attached to her placenta for I think it was maybe 5-6 hours after birth. I had a shower. Jared had skin to skin, and then we tied the little cord tie and explored her placenta. I've still got the matching bracelet to her cord tie. It's a marigold color.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I cut the cord. The placenta is still in the freezer, ready to be buried at some stage. And we, tucked up in bed with our baby. Oh, I did forget to say that my son had slept through this entire thing, through all of the vocalizations, all of the powerful roaring. And he woke up at about 7 when everything was, you know, cleaned up and we were just chilling on the couch. So Jared brought him out and he met his baby sister. Yeah, then we tucked up into bed and it was so powerful and so magical, but so normal and so comfortable and so ease, like the ease of it. Yes, it was intense. Yes, it was, you know, it took so much energy and so much power, but we were just in our home.
Yeah.
Like we just went to bed after and just there's so much beauty in normality, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much beauty in home birth. And it's hard to explain to people who haven't experienced it.
Yes.
But it is night and day compared to hospital birth. Even a physiological hospital birth, it's night and day.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, the biggest high that I have ever experienced. It was, yeah. And then just riding those waves after that birth. And just wanting to relive it, not to change anything, not to do anything differently, just to relive that magic and that moment of, like, I just kept playing over my head the moment that Goldie came out, because just, you know, when you've had a cesarean, and other cesarean mums will know that, if they, you know, when they go on to have a VBAC, the moment that baby comes out of your vagina is like you've done it. You've challenged all of the stigma that has been thrown onto you, all of the negativity, all of those terms that, you know, we get told that the failure to progress, maybe feeling like a failure, and it was just like a big, I've done it.
Yeah. I love that. I love that for you and for all the women who do the same. I love that.
Yeah.
So if you had a first-time mama right now who wants to have her baby naturally, physiologically, she wants to have an empowering birth, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Yeah. I love knowledge is power, because it really is. But I think returning to and fostering your intuition is the greatest gift that you can give yourself. On your pregnancy, birth, and motherhood journey, because it really is a superpower. And it can be hard, but it will serve you so well if you can tune in even before you fall pregnant.
Yeah.
Birth is the most transformative experience of your life. Like it stays with you forever. No matter how it happens, changes your, it stays in your bones, it stays in your cells, it will stay with you for the rest of your life. Make it the experience that you want. I hear so many people say, you know, I want a home birth, but my partner doesn't want this, or my partner's scared. Like, this is your chance. This is your, like, if there's any time where you're going to call the shots and be selfish, in quotation marks, because it's not at all selfish, you make that choice. Yeah. Because you don't get it back. And if it's not your ideal experience, then that's going to affect you. It will affect your partner. It will affect your baby. Obviously, we can't control birth, but we can choose the environment and choose who we birth with. Yeah, if your partner has fears, then they can do the work to then support you the best they can. And my husband is a testament to that. I think the last two is, you know, you don't have to do all of the things to birth. In the right environment, your body will birth your baby. It's innate. Women have been doing it for years and years and years, centuries. Your body knows how to do it. It's just making sure that you've got that, the right environment and those right support people around you that believe or that know and trust in the birth process as much as you do. But ultimately, I think if you want an uninterrupted, undisturbed, you know, truly magical physiological birth where the hormonal matrix is intact, it's in its full power, its full glory, and you can reap the rewards of all of that, I think, you know, the best place is to birth at home.
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
And I know that, you know, that can be an unpopular opinion with some, but really, you know, just leaving your house is going to change your hormones and your response and your fight and flight.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, if I get that women, you know, women want to birth in a hospital and that's okay. But if your goal is undisturbed, true physiological birth, home is the best place.
100%. Absolutely. And that if you can't, then you save up every dollar and employ someone to walk into that hospital with you that will safeguard your space. You know, I can't say that enough. I mean, it's beautiful to have someone as well at home or birth center, but you definitely need it in the maternity system of the
hospital. Yes. Yeah. And that's where knowledge is power comes in. And you need someone on your side, and the investment is so worth it. And that's, you know, a big takeaway from my first birth, that you are vulnerable.
Yeah.
And if I had someone that was 100% knew everything that I wanted, you know, who knows how it could have turned out. So that's a great point. It is so important for those women that don't have the option and that do birth in hospital to have someone that can advocate for them and with them.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.